This hour by Frederick Remington, fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. Exclusive, no refrigeration, 10-year extended shelf life bacon. The thickest, meatiest, center-cut bacon in the industry at fullycookedbacon.com. Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
We have a collection of people on this episode of the Paracast from around the world, almost literally from three different countries. We don't know if ET is among us at this point. But that's going to be the key to our debate with Gene and Chris. So, Chris, you have been a busy bee for the past few weeks, and I wanted to get an update from you before we get into our guests. What's up and what's going on?
Yeah, I've been battling this chronic bronchitis condition that I've been dealing with since 2009. I had a relapse, and then I kicked it, and then it came back, and I'm finishing up antibiotics right now. Actually, today's my last day on them, and I'm doing much better. I got back after a very, very long day already. I was up before dawn helping set up and load in the Phoenix Ballet Company, who's doing a three-day stint here in the Sedona Performing Arts Center for the Nutcracker. I've been dealing with that all day because I've been up since the crack of dawn. I was there getting loading in at 6:30, quarter seven this morning. So it's been a long day. Other than that, I've been keeping busy. I'll be doing a swing in mid-January through California on a speaking tour. I'm debating with our guys with the San Luis Valley Camera Monitoring Project of going ahead and doing a crowdfunding effort to start paying people instead of relying on their spare time, good graces, favors, that sort of thing. Once you start paying people, things tend to happen a lot quicker and in a more expeditious manner, I would hope. Yeah, I've been busy on that. Plus, I'm finishing up finally about the 20th draft of two screenplays I'm working on, and also working on the follow-up to Stuck and Heard. So that's kind of it in a nutshell.
Now, this show was generated by a thread in our forums, which covers the core belief in the UFO field that the flying saucers, whatever you want to call them, are visitors from other planets. That was started by one of our forum regulars, Thomas R. Morrison, who is here, and he'll introduce himself in a moment, and it's called the Extraterrestrial Hypothesis, Fact and Fallacy. Thomas, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you for inviting me on, Gene. I'm an artist in New Orleans. I've been studying physics since I was a child, since my sighting experience as a seven-year-old child. That was a dramatic daylight sighting. And so I've probably spent about 40 years trying to figure out how these things moved. I found the extraterrestrial hypothesis to be the best fit for what I'm trying to understand, which is the physics of these devices, how they move, and how we might be able to replicate them.
One of our participants in the forum is someone who most of our listeners know. He's called Burnt State in the forum, but we also know him by the things he's written and his contributions to some publications is Robert Brandstetter, who's a resident of Canada. Robert?
Hey there, Gene. Thanks for having me back on. Like Thomas, I was brought into the fold because of a very dramatic sighting when I was about nine. And so also for the last 40 years, I've also been moving in and out of paying attention to the field with more and more interest, especially these last 5 years. I really sunk myself into it. Instead of, like Thomas, wanting to know, you know, how they work, I'm kind of more interested in what they are and what their impact is on us. And so a lot of my time has not been given over to the ETH so much as exploring the idea of the witness and what does perception mean and what's the nature of the interactions that are taking place with this conundrum that seems to be fairly age-old on our planet.
Across the world, one of our forum moderators and a regular listener for a number of years, Mike Jones, tell us about yourself.
G'day, Gene, and thanks for having me on the show. I've had a long, almost all my life interest in UFOs. I read Chariots of the Gods when I was about 6 years old, and I've always been interested in them. I've always been someone that's taken them seriously and accepted that they are here. I currently live in the Blue Mountains west of Sydney, Australia, with views of Sydney, and I had one experience that may or may not have been an abduction experience. It could have been sleep paralysis. It could have been something else. It was profound, whatever it was, and it had a long-lasting impact on my worldview, if you will.
Before we get to one more guest, can you tell our listeners maybe in a minute or two a rough overview of this experience?
I went to bed, as I normally do, one night, and I woke up wide awake in the middle of the night, which is unusual for me. I normally wake up in a sort of fairly, you know, dozy state. I was wide awake as if I'd just two or three cups of coffee and was bouncing off the walls. And I could hear noises in the lounge room. Their house does make noises, but this wasn't creaking and shifting of the timbers that I'm used to. I thought I was being burglarized. I thought there was someone in the lounge room. It sounded like there was someone poking around in the lounge. I thought to get up and discovered that I couldn't move. I was absolutely paralyzed. The only part of my body that could move was my eyeballs. And so I was looking at the door frame to the bedroom that led to the hallway and then back to the bedroom, and all the details are as clear in my mind as if I was awake. And then all of a sudden, there's what appears to be a classic grey, except that it was probably 8 feet tall. It only just cleared the door frame, and it sort of slid into the room like it was on roller skates. It didn't appear to walk, and then it slid sideways up the bed, and I passed out in sheer fright. And the next thing I woke up, first thing in the morning, and literally just flew out of the bed and sort of stood there with my arms by my side, panting. It was as if the fright had been suspended for that time. And then as soon as I woke up, it was switched straight back on again. At that stage of the game, the only descriptions of greys were the little short guys. And so I figured to myself, okay, this was just a bad hallucination or a bad nightmare, maybe bad cheese before I'd gone to bed. But years later, I discovered that there are people who recount what they call the tall greys. And so I had to revisit whether or not what happened or didn't happen. But either way, it had a profound effect on me in terms of just how I view the world.
And one more gentleman made the name of Jason, who is known in our forums as Marduk. What does that signify?
Oh, it's just a classic interest I've had, kind of an ancient Sumerian, kind of Mesopotamian philosophy going back to, you know, when I was a teenager, being into such things. I thought it'd be a cool forum name. That's the end of it. There's no mystery behind that.
Tell our listeners about yourself.
Sure. So I'm up here in Calgary, Alberta, Randall's hometown as well. You know, like our other guests, I had, starting with a childhood encounter when I was about 8 with a daylight sighting I had with a buddy of mine. Otherwise, I've had a few encounters over the course of my life, but it kind of stands in stark contrast with the rest of my life, where I live a pretty rational, skeptical, scientific kind of mindset. I'm a professional up here in a big company here in Canada. And, part of my reason for being on the forums and being part of this debate is to reconcile these two kind of parts of my life. To be honest, I would be a skeptic if I hadn't had these encounters. So I'm just thankful to be here and I'm ready to have this great conversation.
And if I can interject for a moment, I've put you in touch with Ray Stanford.
You sure have.
Who has had quite a series of long, and don't say I didn't warn you, long, lengthy phone calls. And why don't you give us a real quick appraisal of meeting Ray now and talking with him at length now on several occasions. So what do you think?
Jason, before we have that answer, we're going to have to do a break. You know, one of those things that people have to do on shows like this, and then Jason will talk about his interactions with the one, the only Ray Stanford, which is going to be fascinating because we're always interested in updates on what that gentleman is up to. And certainly we want to know more about his research. So we're doing, and we'll really get into it in the next segment, a debate on the extraterrestrial hypothesis with a special group of listeners. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast. The Paracast.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items, and entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Kiyosaki, Rogers, and Schiff all concur there's an economic calamity that'll be facing this country. My question to you is, do you know when, and are you prepared? Most people don't, but my friends over at Republic Monetary Exchange have been leading experts in precious metals to help you offset the coming economic collapse. Right now, for a limited time, they have a free book called The 10 Reasons You Should Own Gold. You simply need to give them a call at 888-772-2929 to get that in your hands. Do not allow the insiders to do what they did to you in 2008, putting your IRAs, 401ks, and savings in jeopardy. You need this book, and you need it now. The 10 Reasons You Should Own Gold. Call 888-772-2929. That's 888-772-2929. There's a reason that the largest investment banking company in the world, J.P. Morgan, just purchased another 50 million ounces of silver. This free book will explain it. 888-772-2929.
A commemorative President Trump dollar for only $5? Yes, the historic Trump dollar starts at only $5 at TrumpDollar.us. Choose from our unique three-coin collection in gold, silver, and copper. The Vote Trump Dollar, Inaugural Trump Dollar, and Make America Great Again Trump Dollar. Available only at TrumpDollar.us. Minted in the USA, our Trump dollars commemorate President Trump's patriotic stand. Order your Trump Dollar collection today in time for Christmas delivery at TrumpDollar.us. That's TrumpDollar.us.
ID Stronghold wallets are different. They may look the same on the outside. They're stylish. They'll hold your cards and cash. But they're hiding something great on the inside. No, there are no pyrotechnics. And it doesn't sing when you open it. But it does have magical powers. ID Stronghold wallets protect your critical information and identity from thieves standing right next to you. Protect your family this holiday season with affordable leather ID Stronghold wallets and purses. Anyone can buy a cheap RFID scanner online and snag your information just by walking past you. Contactless credit cards, debit cards, even your work ID badge. ID Stronghold was the first to pioneer RFID blocking technology over 12 years ago. Secure your identity and save 10% by using coupon code PRESENT for a limited time at IDStronghold.com. That's coupon code PRESENT, also available at Walmart.com, eBay, Amazon, or QVC. IDStronghold.com.
Anytime, any place, anywhere, radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Before we go on, I want to remind our listeners that we have a second radio show that we offer. The listeners of the Paracast, if they subscribe to the Paracast Plus, they get the After the Paracast podcast, which could be a mixture of anything under the sun. Unpredictable. We also give a version of the show free of 41 minutes of network ads. So if you want to know more, check plus.theparacast.com. That's plus.theparacast.com. We have Thomas R. Morrison, Robert Brandstetter, Mike Jones, and we have Jason, known as Marduk, in the forums. With Gene and Chris, we're talking about the ET hypothesis, but Jason has also had some interactions with Ray Stanford that we're going to ask about now. Jason?
Sure thing. Hey, first of all, thank you, Chris, for extending the invite and kind of brokering that conversation. Let me just start by saying I was woefully unprepared for my initial conversation with Ray. The man is just a wealth of detail, and his memory and ability to recall what happened decades ago is just absolutely phenomenal. And let me tell you, you know, I got to admit, I was pretty skeptical talking to Ray, you know, given some of the pretty groundbreaking things Chris had to say about the evidence he has. And Ray's actually had some discussions with me and actually started to share some of his material with me. And I got to tell you, the guy knows what he's talking about. I was very skeptical going in, and he's got some data that I think is going to blow some people's minds. I wouldn't quite call it smoking gun, but let me tell you, I can smell gunpowder. That's for sure.
Can you mention any specific things that really impressed you?
Sure. So I think the was it called Project Starlight, Chris?
Correct. Not to be confused with Stephen Greer's Project Starlight. Ray began his Project Starlight International back in the early 70s.
Let me tell you, it appears to have collected far more data than I was actually aware of, including he actually got a laser hit off of one of the objects in mid-flight with a return. The return has full spectrographic analysis. It has all kind of imaging on it. And it actually appears to demonstrate something with when I did some analysis on it and kind of referred to some material I found online. Looks very much like, for all intents and purposes, something covered in a plasma being contained by a magnetic field in transit, let me tell you, which absolutely, absolutely floored me.
Well, we hope to get further word on what Ray is doing in the future in the PowerCast, but let's get now to what will be a great debate or something. It all started when Thomas R. Morrison opened this forum topic or thread in our forums. Therein lies a tale, I guess. It's called the Extraterrestrial Hypothesis, Fact and Fallacy. So, Thomas, why did you start the thread, and what is your basic thrust of a discussion?
Well, I've noticed that a prevailing view at the Paracast lately has tended towards the reframing the debate issues, you know, looking for new ways to understanding a phenomenon, and the consensus seems to be that a paranormal explanation is favored. But like Jason's story about his discussion with Ray Stanford indicates, it seems very clear to me that we're dealing with physical phenomenon in the sky. Now, I don't know if the ETH can explain the full range of associated phenomena, but it certainly seems that what we're looking at are technological devices that appear to employ a field propulsion principle, which we may now theoretically have some understanding of, thanks to Miguel Alcubierre. And I think that we need to collect hard scientific data, like Chris is doing with both of his projects. And it would be great to collect even more data if we could get a larger research effort into it to really understand what these things are physically and how they maneuver. And I think eventually we're going to understand how to create devices that can levitate and accelerate faster than a bullet, which is commonly reported in UFO sightings. And so when you marry that with all of the recent advancements in exosolar planetary discoveries, the fact that there are between 50 and 170 billion trillion stars in our observable universe, and some 40 billion trillion of those look like they're going to be Earth-like planets that are in the habitable zone of their parent stars, it seems all but scientifically certain that there are going to be advanced forms of intelligent life out there, and we should be expecting them to arrive here and appear in our skies and perhaps collect data. So that's the perspective that I bring to it. I'd really like to get to a point where we can replicate this kind of field propulsion technology, and theoretically we are making advances in that direction, so that's really exciting. I think that'll change the world for all of us.
Now, one of the early participants was Robert Brandstetter, known as Bernstein in our forums. Robert, what's your reaction to this?
I agree that the universe is possibly teeming with other life forms. Whether or not they're visiting here or look like humanoids, I think is a highly debatable issue. For me, I think that, you know, the first level reading of the phenomenon, especially the lights in the sky component of it, whether it includes radar traces or not, is the notion that it is an alien life form. And that's what it looks like. And Vallée calls it a first level reading of it. And I think we need to take a look at it and break down the phenomenon, because I think there's more than just one thing going on. Beyond just lights in the sky, we have these things called abductions, we have close encounter cases, and when we look at the close encounter cases, it seems like there's something much more interesting taking place than just the alien craft that's landing here. And even the notion of the alien craft landing and collecting data, when we kind of break that down and take a look at how many cases of those might be taking place, it seems to be rather nonsensical in terms of the number of visits. And then when we look at, you know, some of the crude aspects of the abduction phenomenon and kind of the retro technologies that we see there, it seems like things are being done almost more for our benefit, or somehow we're more involved in naming or defining what's being seen inside of a close encounter environment. And I would separate the close encounter cases very much from the lights and sky phenomenon and break it down even further after that. I think our categorizing of the phenomenon needs to be much more diverse, and the way that we collect data and verify our data needs a major overhaul as well. And I think that the other piece that is often left out of the puzzle, because it's not a reproducible phenomenon, is the witness themselves. And they're really the core figure that's responsible for the majority and the bulk of what we call the UFO mystery. And I think looking at the impacts on witnesses, the fact that there's often concurrent or further paranormal activity that people experience is quite fascinating. We should be exploring the role of perception, memory, culture, psychology, all of these as features of the phenomena, especially in close encounter cases, in order to perhaps better understand how the very act of seeing is playing a role in helping us understand the mystery itself. So I think I have no problem giving the ETH over to the lights in the sky component of it. But I think when we start lumping together the other aspects that are part of the phenomenon, that things seem to break down a little bit more. And especially when we give a thought to how the phenomenon has changed with us culturally and technologically over history, and that it's probably been with us for age old, you know, in terms of the beginning of our first cultural experiences and naming and defining the idea of seeing strange visitors coming to us, that we need to, I think, broaden the way that we look at it and explore this mystery.
We're going to pursue more of this and more reactions with Thomas Morrison, Robert Brandstetter, Jason, Mike Jones, Gene, and Chris.
You're in the podcast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Hello, Mr. Anderson. The NSA has noticed how much time you spend on conservative news sites. We have no choice but to consider you a domestic terrorist.
Tired of your internet activity being monitored by Big Brother?
Get VirtualShield.com,
the world's easiest-to-use virtual private network. Browse the web anonymously, leaving pesky advertisers and spies in the dust.
Get started today at VirtualShield.com.
Take advantage of our free 30-day trial.
VirtualShield.com. You have the right to remain private.
Excuse me, sir. Could you take a picture of my family and me with my cell phone?
Sure, Mrs. Anderson. Smile for the camera.
Too bad hackers never get proper permission to access your cell phone or computer camera. Anyone is or could be susceptible to illegal spying. That's why VirtualShield.com has developed Identisave, a new security software that blocks camera and microphone access from unwanted spies. Get started today at VirtualShield.com. Take advantage of our free 30-day trial. VirtualShield.com. You have the right to remain private.
What looks good under your Christmas tree and tastes even better? Big Berkey water filters. Yes, the gift of clean water. A gift that provides a great foundation for achieving good health in the lives of your loved ones. A Big Berkey water filter gives them protection from bacteria, heavy metals, chlorine, fluoride, pesticides and herbicides, VOCs and more. And best of all, a Big Berkey water filter is a gift that lasts for many years with no additional investment. And that saves time and money in filter replacements that other water filters require and are even powerful enough to to purify treated, untreated, or even stagnant pond water. As always, all orders over $50 are shipped free, and GCN listeners get 5% off all ceramic filter systems. Order online at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com, spelled Big, B-E-R-K-E-Y, WaterFilters.com, or call 877-99-BERKEY. That's 877-99-BERKEY. Gift well this Christmas. Give a Big Berkey water filter.
People search the internet for everything, including you. With a few clicks, information from your past can be quickly discovered. From business deals gone wrong, to misleading reviews, negative articles, and unflattering images. Studies show 78% of people search for someone online before doing business with them. Will they find the real you? With ReputationDefender.com, you can establish a positive internet presence. ReputationDefender.com pioneered the field with over a decade of experience, serving thousands of successful individuals and businesses. We use patented, award-winning systems to boost positive content and suppress negative material. Don't let the internet define you. Take control of your reputation today with ReputationDefender.com. For your quick, free reputation analysis, call 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. 800-831-0771. Or visit ReputationDefender.com.
Have you checked your ECS lately? We have. We are New Pharma, scientists who specialize in human functions controlled by the endocannabinoid system, or ECS. Let me simplify. Your ECS is involved in physiological processes like appetite, pain sensation, mood, memory, and immune systems. New Pharma's patent-pending science is the big difference in our natural solutions, formulated for your well-being. For example, our foundation product provides targeted nutrition to support a healthy endocannabinoid system, which is directly responsible for managing and controlling inflammation. This product contains turmeric, which is known as one of the best anti-inflammatories on the planet. Our allergies product contains sage, which is a very effective decongestant. See all of our amazing capsules, essential oils, and ECS herbal tea at GNUPHARMA.com. New Pharma. Your path to wellness begins here.
Hi, this is James Fox from Chasing UFOs. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
We continue here. Thomas Morrison, Robert Brandstetter, Jason, Mike Jones, Gene, and Chris debating the ETH, or extraterrestrial hypothesis. Before I ask Thomas's reaction to what Robert said, Mike, would you like to give your reaction?
Sure. I agree with Robert that the observer tends to frame the phenomena and they describe it. And we see that with the Kaga cult and with indigenous peoples when they've been first contacted as well. The experience is defined by the observer, and it's defined within the lexicon of their culture. And I think with humans, as our technology increases and our technology gets better, as our scientific jargon and lexicon gets more complex, I think we're able to frame the phenomena more accurately. We go from chariots of the gods to structured craft because, you know, we have structured craft now, and so we're able to see structured craft in a context that makes sense to us. I think that the extraterrestrial hypothesis, it doesn't need to be the only explanation, but it certainly is a very good explanation, and I think that you can never discount it. I don't think you could ever say it's never going to be that. So, yeah, I think the extraterrestrial hypothesis is a valid hypothesis. It doesn't need to be the only answer. For example, you know, some have hypothesized that that there might have been an intelligent species of dinosaur that managed to survive the extinction of the dinosaurs, and that they may be the explanation for, you know, the draconians or the reptilians that we see. That's not beyond the realms of possibility. But I think that even if some of the craft we're seeing in the skies are actually from a pre-mammalian civilization here on Earth, that doesn't mean they all are. I think that the extraterrestrial hypothesis, and for the reasons outlined, the universe is so big and the model is so consistent, where we have a planet orbiting a star here with life on it, it's inconceivable that model wouldn't be replicated throughout not only our galaxy, but throughout the hundreds and millions of other galaxies in the observable universe. People often talk about the distance involved, but if distance isn't an issue for them, if they have a propulsion means that the distance is not an issue for them, then that's really not a barrier either.
Jason, what's your impression of this?
You know, I've spent some time mulling about this, and I think it's very, very easy to get lost in this subject, and very easy to look at it from so many different angles that you can just kind of lose your way. And, you know, and the stance I've taken is a very, very simple one. What is the solution to this crazy stuff that we see in the sky and experiences that people have that actually requires the fewest amount of extensions to what we currently know about the known universe? And the ETH fits that very, very nicely. We know we exist here on a wet planet, orbiting a pretty ordinary star. We, you know, it's very, very likely there are other wet planets orbiting other ordinary stars. And we know that we can get there from here. You know, it's just we find the time scales we can currently do it pretty inconvenient to do so, but we could do it if we chose to do that. And given that, the position I'm at is I have yet to see a single line of reasoning that pushes me off that very, very simple thing that the ETH fits best. I'm not saying that other hypotheses are impossible. I'm just saying that they're more improbable.
Chris?
Well, we have discussed this quite a bit from time to time here on the Paracast, and I think my views are fairly well known, if not recognized. And, you know, I just want to, without going through a whole litany of arguments against the ETH, I'm gonna throw this out there. First of all, the modern age of UFOs occurred when we started popping off nuclear weapons. That's an indication to me that no, we're not being quarantined because we're being bad galactic children. I think what we're doing is we're putting another tenant on the planet in jeopardy because of our sudden use of and development of nuclear weapons, which could be highly detrimental to all life forms on the planet. If this emerging crisis in North Korea, I mean, who knows? It wouldn't take much possibly to set off an exchange. And if something was already here, if some intelligence was already present on the planet, they would be put in jeopardy. That's why I think we started seeing an amazing upsurge of activity within a year of detonating nuclear weapons. That's point number one. Point number two is there's been too many encounters that indicate that whatever these beings or intelligences are, they're acting in a nonsensical, theatrical, tricksterish manner. How many times do you have to be seen picking flowers and looking at rocks and other things on the surface of the planet in amazement and wonder when you're a highly evolved, highly technological civilization? You would be able to put something in orbit around this planet the size of a baseball with our technology and find out pretty much anything you needed to know. I feel that there's too many encounters that make no sense at all, that appear to have the witness supplying the details of the encounter, what the beings look like, what the technology looks like, and appears to be acting in a particular technological manner. We're seeing a mirroring of technology based on our present state of the art. It appears to couch itself just slightly ahead of our level of development. There's too many things that don't add up in terms of something extraterrestrial coming here from many light years away and acting like well, you know, like they're checking out the new house that's just been built in the neighborhood. There's just too many things that don't conform to what would be, in my mind, just a very simple approach that one would take in visiting a new planet or monitoring and keeping tabs on life on another planet. So I think we should exhaust all closed system answers and possibilities before jumping off planet.
Thomas, you want to respond to that?
Yeah, that was a lot. There's a lot of different points there. I have problems with the other tenant hypothesis because in order for a civilization to have become more advanced than we are today, they would have had to have left a huge global footprint at some point under the soil. And we haven't found any indications of a parallel civilization arising on the Earth. And we've done a lot of digging. I think we also probably would have been able to detect an industrial age, you know, and there's no signs of that in the soil. So I don't think they're coming from there from our own planet. I suppose it's possible that another form of intelligent life could have evolved here, but something that could produce the industrial devices that we're seeing that can levitate and accelerate at the rates we're seeing, that's really hard to imagine without leaving some kind of evidence behind that we'd be seeing right now. Another point is often raised is that, why are we seeing so many different cases of sample collection from the soil and maybe biological samples and things like that? I'm not sure how many of those are actually happening. It's really difficult to estimate the real numbers. I mean, is it really that many or is it more rare than we think? But I don't think that you can gather all the data that you could possibly want about a living planet like ours from space, no matter how advanced your technology is. I mean, even today we send probes and we analyze soil samples on Mars, and this seems like having a sample that you can perform scientific tests on is kind of an essential ingredient to understanding a system. And it makes a lot of sense to me that an extraterrestrial life form would do that here on the Earth. Plus, I think that we need to realize that if the extraterrestrial hypothesis is correct, then it's probably likely that there are a great number of very advanced civilizations all around us in our own galaxy and throughout the universe.
We'll continue with Thomas's response, looking at the ETH, or are there other tenants in the building with Thomas and Jason and Robert and Mike and Gene and Chris? You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNLive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
Hello, Mr. Anderson. The NSA has noticed how much time you spend on conservative news sites. We have no choice but to consider you a domestic terrorist.
Tired of your internet activity being monitored by Big Brother? Get VirtualShield.com, the world's easiest-to-use virtual private network. Browse the web anonymously, leaving pesky advertisers and spies in the dust. Get started today at VirtualShield.com. Take advantage of our free 30-day trial. VirtualShield.com. You have the right to remain private.
Excuse me, sir. Could you take a picture of my family and me with my cell phone?
Sure. Sure, Mrs. Anderson. Smile for the camera.
Too bad hackers never get proper permission to access your cell phone or computer camera. Anyone is or could be susceptible to illegal spying. That's why VirtualShield.com has developed Identisave, a new security software that blocks camera and microphone access from unwanted spies. Get started today at VirtualShield.com. Take advantage of our free 30-day trial. VirtualShield.com. You have the right to remain private.
The answer to being in control of your own health care is freedom from insurance. Become part of a group of self-pay patients that come together to share in each other's medical expenses. Individual share amounts begin at $107 a month and $347 for families. Choose from three health sharing programs. Holistic treatments may be eligible for sharing. See guidelines. discount programs available for dental, vision, and pharmacy. Go to libertyoncall.org. That's libertyoncall.org.
Have you ever lost your power and wanted to simply flip a switch to get the lights back on? If so, pay close attention because huge discounts are now available in solar generators. Perfect for backup power outages and emergencies. Portable solar generators provide life-saving electrical power when you need it most. And, unlike gas generators, a solar generator runs quietly, emits no dangerous fumes, and produces an endless supply of electricity from the sun. It's like having an electric power plant running secretly in your own home. Right now, get a $5,000 solar generator for just $995 while supplies last. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more. That's MySolarBackup.com. GCN listeners, use coupon code GCN at checkout for this special offer. MySolarBackup.com. Use coupon code GCN. EMP protection available at an additional charge.
Fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. I'm talking thick, meaty, center-cut, presidential bacon. Savory and delicious. I buy some, I use some, I store some. Awesome. No refrigeration needed with a 10-year shelf life. NASA pack technology. Bacon. Fully cooked, fully hydrated, ready-to-eat right from the packed bacon. Or warm and served. Life-saving, ready-to-eat bacon. 10-year shelf life bacon. Ships free at fullycookedbacon.com. Fullycookedbacon.com.
This is Leslie Kane, and I'm with the Coalition for Freedom of Information, and you are listening to the Paracast.
This is the worldwide episode of the Paracast with Thomas and Jean and Chris from the U.S., and Jason and Robert from Canada, and Mike from Australia, and nobody from Mars yet. We weren't able to get the Martian Manhunter on here. We certainly made an effort, but he chose not to come. Thomas, you want to continue your response before we get further answers?
Sure. I was talking about how the ETH would suggest that it's likely that many advanced civilizations exist all around us. They could each be sending their own probes and performing their own missions to the Earth for any number of reasons, but analyzing our biology and our planet and our ecosphere would probably be a big part of that. I mean, that's certainly what we would do, right? If we could make it to other living planets in our vicinity of the galaxy, I think we'd be doing very similar things to what's reported. Also, there's the argument that the distances are too great, that, you know, it just doesn't seem plausible they could be traveling all that way here to do these, you know, fairly mundane experiments. But what we're seeing with theoretical physics is that if you can warp the metric of space-time in the correct way, then there's really no limit to how fast you can go, even theoretically. If you could control the metric of space-time, you know, you could move so many times faster than the speed of light that it's incalculable. The only upper limit that I've even been able to vaguely estimate would be the inflationary epoch of the universe, where space-time expanded at 10 billion trillion times the speed of light. If the technology could achieve that, you could span the observable universe in a fraction of a second. So our ideas of distance, I think, are a little too parochial for what's coming down the pike technologically. Then there's the argument that the technology only appears to be slightly ahead of our development, but in the 70 years that we've seen these craft levitating and making radical accelerations that would destroy any human design technology, we've seen no progress towards a field propulsion technology that can replicate that. And it may, in fact, be many thousands of years ahead of us still. We don't know how close that technology is yet, but from the calculations that we're seeing theoretically, it's a huge problem for our technology to try to manifest an effect like that. Curving space-time is not an easy thing to do. It could be many eons before we're able to do it. I'm hoping not, but that's what the math is telling us right now. With each one of the objections to the extraterrestrial hypothesis, I find that there's a fairly easy, rational explanation that can counter it. So I've yet to hear really a single compelling point that would make us question whether alien visitors could come here from other stars.
Okay, so we're talking here about maybe warp drive or something, huh?
Absolutely. That's exactly what we're talking about.
Now, scientists, by the way, are actually working on warp drive.
And we don't know what the actual true level of our technological development is. That's highly classified. It's amazing how much we could accomplish in a couple of decades. I think the standard equation that I've heard for years now is that the state of the art in the black world is 15 to 20 years ahead of public disclosure. And at the rate of technological progress that we've been making in the last 30, 40 years, we could have managed to break through in many areas of aerospace and gravitics and magnetohydrodynamic propulsion, these sorts of things. I want to, again, stress that, the theatricality element, the tricksters element, the stuff that often doesn't even get included in sighting reports, close encounter cases, the inexplicable, the things that would totally negate the case in a researcher, investigator, or law enforcement's mind. These are details that are left out, and I think that this is kind of the elephant in the room, if you will, the absurdity of many of these encounters and the nonsensical, tricksterish manner in which interactions are taking place, at least the reported aspect of it. And there's just a certain amount of theatricality that doesn't need to be there, that has always been there. It just doesn't really add up, at least not in my estimation.
I think that the incomprehensible behavior aspect is actually something we've already seen within our own contact scenarios here. I mean, for example, when the white people first came to Australia, they almost got speared to death because they caught a turtle and began to eat it and didn't offer a part of that turtle to the tribal elders that were in the area. To the local people, that behavior was incomprehensible. It was tricksterish. It was wrong. It was, they just couldn't understand why anyone would do such a strange, strange thing as to catch a turtle and not offer the older members of the tribe their portion first. And the young men of the tribe got very, very angry and grabbed their spears and we're gonna do cooking his man in, because they had behaved in such a strange and unusual way. We see the same thing with the cargo culters, where the visitors appear to be very, very strange and very, very unusual, but that's only from the context of the culture that's seeing them to the culture that's actually here, looking at the flowers, catching the turtle, landing planes on runways. There's nothing unusual about what they're doing at all. It's the disparity is simply between the two cultures.
Well, and I want to challenge some of the kind of inherent biases we have in having this conversation. The first is that they're actually any smarter than we are. They might be very technologically advanced, but in every other way, if you look at their interpersonal skills as an example, they're pretty wanting, right? And let's look at some of the crazy things we do when we explore space. I mean, one of the first people to the moon went up there with a golf ball and golf club and played golf on the moon. Like, why did he do that? Any observer of that would be like, what the heck are these crazy humans doing? Right.
You know, I wonder something before we go on here that reminds me of the novel War of the Worlds. And you saw this in the movie version with Tom Cruise in the original George Powell movie version, where E.T. comes here and E.T. is invincible. E.T. is going to take over, but they succumb to our cold virus and they die off. And you wonder here, if we have all these races coming from other worlds, do they take precautions when they come here to prevent them from infecting us? I'm not worried about them being infected by us, because I assume they would allow for that. But do they care enough to protect us from them?
Well, that's a good question. Well, you would think that they would if they were scientifically inclined and had a concern for not having a... They're obviously concerned about not having an overt impact on us. But, you know, how are they able to breathe our air, for instance? Most entity reports, not all, but most, do not indicate any sort of visible devices that are helping them with any sort of respiratory process. And why so many reports of humanoids? I think that to me puts some warning flags up. You know, it's the automatic assumption that life out there is going to be, bisymmetrical and look like us. And instead of, I think that kind of cool element, the recent movie of, what was it called, the Contact movie that was out with Amy Adams, the title escapes me, but that particular scenario had you know, had off-planted beings that were, in an enclosed environment, not interacting with our environment and vice versa. And the whole communication thing I thought was done very, very well. My favorite part of that film. However, we have aliens that are able to communicate with us. For instance, there's too much about it that is contrived, that is theatrical, that it doesn't really conform, at least in my estimation, to an acceptance of how life should be, much more diverse, you would think, in terms of how these beings appear to us, whether this is all holographic in nature, being staged for our benefit. These encounters may not even really reflect the true nature of these entities or these intelligences. They may be projections from our own mind, filling in the details, that sort of thing. But again, without sounding like we're going around on a merry-go-round here, I still feel that the other 95% of the Earth's oceans that have yet to be explored or even effectively mapped, and the fact that we have probably more water in the mantle of the planet, for instance, than we do in the Earth's oceans, we haven't even talked about the possibility of some sort of parallel existence. There's a lot of room, I think, for further research to look at the possibility that these entities, these intelligences, may be more terrestrial than we are. And your point before, Thomas, about there not being some sort of technological footprint. Well, if they developed all these technologies, several hundred thousand years ago, there's a good chance that we would not detect that. And if we did, we wouldn't know what we were looking at.
Got more to come with Gene, Chris, Thomas, Jason, Robert, Mike. You're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
This just in. Before your doctor gives you another antibiotic prescription that you don't want, get this free report, The Miracle of Garlic, your first home medicine. This free report is filled with easy kitchen remedies for common colds, flus, sore throats, ear infections, and more. Plus, learn to boost your immunity before you get sick. Go now to GCNwellness.com. Just like it sounds, GCNwellness.com to get your free report, The Miracle of Garlic. Click GCNwellness.com.
Many medicines used to treat colds and flu contain acetaminophen, a pain reliever and fever reducer found in hundreds of over-the-counter and prescription medicines. But taking too much or more than one medication containing acetaminophen per day can damage your liver. So always read the label and don't take acetaminophen if you drink three or more alcoholic drinks every day. To learn more, visit fda.gov/OTC pain info. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Food and Drug Administration.